Well, hello. Hope you all are having a good week so far, and looking forward to jumping back into Esther today. And so I hope you've been keeping up with where we are. If you haven't, I would encourage you to go back and watch those, because I don't spend a lot of time going into a recap or anything like that. I just want to jump right in. So make sure you've watch the other ones, or you might kind of be a little lost on what's going on here. So we're going to pick up in Esther chapter 2, beginning in verse number 5. So up until now, it's pretty much been what's happening with the king in the palace, but now we're going to be introduced to two new main characters now, and it's just kind of a switching gears here. The scene just changes in the midst of what's going on. So notice now in verse 5. It says, "Now there was a Jew in Susa the citadel whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjaminite." Now, some things we got to talk about here. Now, if you remember, we've talked about this, that the Israelites were taken away to Babylon, and then under the rule of the Babylonians. Then when Persia defeated them, Persia said, "All right, you Israelites, you can return home and rebuild your city, rebuild your temple. You know, we'll help you, we support you." And many of them did, while some did not. They remained in Persia because that was the only place they knew. That was the only, you know, that was where they had lived. And so Mordecai and his family were some that stayed in Persia. And so that's what the author is letting us know here, is that there was a Jew in Susa, because it's letting us know he shouldn't been there. He should not have been there. The Jews are supposed to be in Jerusalem, where they belong. That's where God's people belong. But yet he stayed, and his family had stayed in Persia. So we're already kind of being told up front, hey, there's a Jew in Susa, and the Jew doesn't belong in Susa. He belongs in Jerusalem. Okay. So what's said there is very important. And then it noticed that his name was Mordecai. Well, most people, scholars believe that Mordecai was named after the false god Marduk, who they made like child sacrifices to and stuff like that. So we're kind of getting a picture here of Mordecai and what kind of family they are, that they're probably not very devout, faithful Jews, because they did not return to Jerusalem. They're naming their kids after false gods. Like, this is a problem. And notice that he's a true Israelite. It says that the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, and the son of Kish, a Benjaminite. So he's from the tribe of Benjamin. And that, why we're told his family is going to come up a little bit later. So we'll talk about that. We won't get into that right now. But there's going to be a reason for that. So we'll just remember that. This particular verse. And notice that we get the historical context here. It says, "Who had been carried away from Jerusalem among the captives, carried away from Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away." So there's what I just said in scripture to show why they were living in Persia, because they were living in been taken away in the exile by the Babylonians. So, but we don't get a very good picture of Mordecai, but we do see that he's not a bad guy. Look at verse 7. It says, "He was bringing up Hadassah, that is Esther, the daughter of his uncle, for she had neither father nor mother. And the young woman had a beautiful figure and was lovely to look at. And when her father and her mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter." So he's a reputable guy. I mean, he takes in this, his cousin, this young woman, when her mother and father both pass away, he takes her in and cares for her. And we're not told that he has a wife, so we don't know if maybe he raised her with his wife, and maybe his wife passed away or something like that. But what we do know is that he raised, at least for a part of her life, he has raised Esther, who is, we see that we're given Hadassah, which is her Jewish name, and Esther is her Persian name. So she's kind of living in both worlds. She is kind of raised as a Jew, but she's also being treated as a Persian as well. So, but we see that Mordecai is caring for her, and so he seems like a decent enough man. He cared for her. And so we're introduced here to Esther now, who the book is named after. Now, there's a few things that we need to pull out of this as well about her. We said that she was given a Jewish name, but she also has a Persian name. And then notice that it describes her as being having a beautiful figure and lovely to look at. Whenever physical descriptions are given of someone, it's because there's a purpose in it. I think about Leah in Genesis, when it talks about Leah and her weak eyes, it's compared to Rachel, her sister, who was lovely to look at. And so there's some competition there about who was beautiful and who was not so beautiful. And we see how Laban treats his daughter and gives her away instead of Rachel because of he gives her away first and stuff like that. And then Joseph in Genesis, we're told that he's a handsome young man. And of course, the lady that comes on to him, because he was handsome to look at. And so here we're told that Esther is beautiful and lovely to look at because remember what's going on at this same time. The king is sending people out looking for beautiful young women to be his bride, his wife, his queen. So that's going on. So we're seeing here that the Bible is showing us, hey, there's a reason why we're letting you know. This wasn't to objectify her or anything like that. So then verse 8, sure enough, when the king's order and his edict were proclaimed, and when many young women were gathered in Susa, the citadel, in custody of Haggai, Esther also was taken into the king's palace and put in custody of Haggai, who had charge of the women. So notice, sometimes when we talk about scripture, we have to talk about grammar, because grammar is part of the story. It tells the story. So notice that it says that Esther also was taken. She didn't volunteer for this. She didn't go sign up for this. She was taken. Someone grabbed her and took her away to become part of this great contest, this great bachelor in Persia contest here. She didn't go looking for this. She was taken. It was passive. Somebody else did this to her, okay? But now notice what happens in verse 9. It says, and the young woman, still talking about Esther here, pleased him, Haggai, and won his favor. And he quickly provided her with her cosmetics and her portion of food and with 7 chosen young women from the king's palace and advanced her and her young women to the best place in the harem. So Haggai, who is now over managing these women before they go to the king, she has won favor with him. And again, this is something that's happened outside of her. She won favor with him. He is now giving her her cosmetics. He's given her the best food. He is promoting her, and he's giving servants to help her so that she can be prepared to go in with the king, so that she can look her best, and that so she can be ready. And so we can see all this, how things are happening outside of what she's doing. And it's all because what we are going to talk about is how God is working through this, okay? But notice now verse 10. It says, Esther had not made known her people or kindred, for Mordecai had commanded her not to make it known. So here's the big kind of crux in what's going on. Now we see that it seems like God is working again behind the scenes to put Esther, even to have her taken to be a part of this, and then how God is working through Haggai to raise her up essentially and promote her so that she'll be a front runner in the contest essentially. But then there's compromise going on here because she is not saying, hey, I'm a Jew, because Mordecai told her not to. And remember, Mordecai is probably in there. He has already stayed in Susa because it was what was comfortable for him. He had compromised himself and his family had compromised to stay in Persia. And so now he's getting Esther to compromise as well. Because when it talks about her eating her portion of food, she's eating the king's food. She's probably not following God's law. She's probably not eating the way that she should. She has about to go in to sleep with a king, a Gentile, on top of that. And who she's not married to or anything like that. Like she is doing things and will do things that will break God's law. And it's because he has compromised her. And he has encouraged her to compromise. And so what we see is, yes, God is working behind the scenes and underneath this all, but we also see Mordecai and Esther compromising. They're not standing up and being faithful for what God has called them to do and how they should be faithful and following him and the witnesses that they should be for him. And so when we compare this, when you read Daniel, and we don't have time to read that right now, but I would encourage you to go and look at that, because when you read Daniel, Daniel chapter 1, when Daniel is chosen by the king tries to give him the choice food and all this, and he says, no, 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 I'm not going to eat that. I'm going to eat what my law, what God's law says that I should do. And then he says, and test me, because I want you to see that if I eat this little bit of vegetables compared to what you give all the other young men, I want you to see if I am as healthy and as strong as they are. And so instead of compromising and going along with it, he stands up for it, and God blesses him because of that. And he's actually even more stronger and even more healthier than those young men who had eaten all the king's food, all the rich food. And because Daniel didn't compromise, the Bible says he had purposed in his heart not to defile himself, God blessed it. Now, when we look here, we see that, yes, she is compromising, and yes, God is working through it, but they're also still responsible, because things are going to happen here that, that again, God is working through it, but that doesn't mean that their compromise was okay, because they're going to be put in a situation where it's going to be a dire consequence. And who knows, maybe she could have spoken up and still become queen. We don't know. We don't know what would have happened. If it would have been unsafe for her, we don't know. But what we do know is that they're compromising. And so what I want us to think about today is, are there places in our life where we're compromising because we're not trusting God to take care of us or to promote us or to bless us? We're not essentially putting our life in his hands because we think we have to take the shortcut. Maybe it's at work. We think we have to cut corners in order to get ahead. Maybe we think we have to step over people or step on people in order to get that promotion. I'm not going to do this in a God-honoring way. I've got to do this. I've got to play cutthroat because that's the way I get ahead. Or maybe with our friends, we think, well, I want to be popular like those people, so I'm going to gossip about them so that these people will be my friends and turn away from them. Or we do things in our witness. We don't stand up for Christ. We won't share the gospel with people because we think, well, if I do that, they'll make fun of me or they won't be my friends. They'll be angry with me. They might harass me. They might persecute me. And so there's ways that we can compromise, and we can either compromise on the things that we do or the things that we don't do because we're afraid, what if it goes bad? And so I want us to consider that today is, are there areas in our life where we're just not trusting God? And that's really what Mordecai and Esther are doing here, because remember, they're not even thinking about God. There's nowhere in here that God is even mentioned. There's no prayer. There's no seeking God. That was the thing about Daniel. When you go back and read Daniel, Daniel prayed 3 times a day, even though the king had said, don't pray. He prayed 3 times a day because he said, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be faithful to God. And so here we don't see Mordecai or Esther doing anything like that. And so I want us to think about that. Are there places that maybe we're compromising, we're taking shortcuts in our life because we're just really not trusting God with the results? We think we either have to cut corners, or we think we have to be quiet or not say certain things because that could get us in trouble. And so we're afraid of what's going to happen. So instead of doing what God has asked us to do and commanded us to do, we instead do the opposite because we're worried about the outcomes. And so I want us just to consider that today. Ask God to help you through his spirit, to show you maybe ways that you're living in fear in that. Because really what it boils down to, and this is where the rubber meets the road really, is in the end, do we want to please man or do we want to please God? And that's the same for me as a pastor. It's the same for you and whatever you do, whether you're a student, have a full-time job, whether you're a stay-at-home mom, whether you're retired, whatever it is, any relationship, any time that we come to a crossroad, the question is do we want to please man or do we want to please God? And here, Esther and Mordecai, they're not pleasing God. They're trying to please man at this point. And so that's something that we have to come to terms with, is are we going to please God or please man? And every time that we seek to please man, we're compromising. I mean, that's really what we're doing. And so we have to be able to recognize that and say, you know what? I'm going to please God regardless. And I'm going to please God, and I'm going to trust him with the results. Even if it means I lose my job, I'm going to trust God that he's going to take care of me. Even if I lose my friends, I'm going to trust God that he's going to take care of me. If if this person is offended because I talk about Jesus, then you know what? I'm going to just pray that I planted a seed and let God work in his heart. Like, we really have to come to that point of saying, I'm going to seek to please God no matter what, and I'm going to trust him with the results. And here's the thing. When we do that, God is faithful to take care of it. May not always work out the way that we want it to, but we can know that he is faithful to take care of us, and he's faithful to work in the situation. So there's my challenge to you today, is are there areas in your life where maybe you're compromising? And ask God, first of all, to show you those areas where you have, but secondly, ask him to forgive you. Because as we're going to talk about, and as we're going to see, is even though they are compromising, God is still working. And that's what we're going to talk about in the next session. So hope you all have a good day, and God bless you. We'll talk to you soon.